These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Call and give us your take and then get off the phone.
Kelker and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Runners will be off with a crack of the bat with two outs. Kimbrel deals, Brinkman in the air, left field. Benintendi dives, and he makes the catch! Oh, what a play! Game saver, Andrew Benintendi! The Red Sox win on a spectacular catch by Benintendi in left field. Wow! What a game! What a finish!
All right, I know you would think that Felger and Maz would come out and say that that catch overrated, should have had it, not that great, people are overplaying it. That's what you think we would do. But what have we done? How do we feel about that catch?
Oh, no, I mean, in terms of the stakes, it's a big catch. And look, I was thinking about this last night. Is there a bigger catch in Red Sox history?
Like a catch in Red Sox history?
Like, you know, or even say bigger defensive play. Like, I can't come up with anything.
That Bernanski catch, but it's not on the level of this.
So that was regular season.
Yeah. To win the division.
Yeah, that's the only one that I could even think of, Murray.
Picking the guy off first base in the first game of the World Series in 04?
07, right? Maybe it was 04. It was Holiday, 04. Right.
You did it in both.
Yeah, actually. Right.
Game
right.
One of both World Series, you picked a guy off.
Right. So, so that's a good one. But again, early, like.
I'm talking about the Cardinals one. I think you caught him off third. So there was a play there.
Oh, yeah, Supan.
Yeah.
It was a pitcher.
It was Jeff Supan, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And Holiday was at first base in 07.
That's right.
And so, I mean, there were little ones like that, but this game ending, winning runs on base.
Is there a Bobby Kelty catch in the Rocky series?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Not that anyone remembers, Stu, other than you.
No, I don't know. Look, you know, that's sort of.
You know what the Red Sox fan will say?
Dream the impossible dream.
was a Yastrzemski catch in Detroit over his shoulder in 67?
No. Well, that was a regular season game in New York to save a no-hitter.
I thought that was in Detroit diving back towards the wall in 67. It all blends together with
Harry. So I'm telling you.
You ridiculous old Red Sox fans glorifying that year, but I want to. Yaz had one in C7 that everyone, Steve Buckley, you know, lathers himself to.
Yeah, that opines about or, you know, pontificates about. Look, I'm telling you, it's up there as far as, you know, memorable plays, defensive plays in Red Sox history. There's no question about it, but it was the stakes. I mean, to lay your nuts on the line like that. Like, in a lot of ways.
No. You've actually missed it. The most notable defensive play in Red Sox history. Hello? Buckner.
Oh. Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. In the opposite direction.
There's not even debating.
Oh, yeah, no. They've had plenty of screw ups defensively. Pesky held the ball like the whole nine yards. I can rattle off.
He
a
held
ton
the
of
ball,
those.
Buck. Buck, he held the ball. He choked. He held the ball.
I mean, like, you can rattle him off, but to under the circumstances, you know, 2-2 versus 3-1 in the American League Championship Series, tying and winning runs on base, ball, and he had to dive. There were a lot of plays you look at, and you say, yeah, he dressed it up. He didn't have to really dive for that ball. That ball was going to hit the turf if he doesn't dive.
It was a great play, and the stakes, Maz, you're right to point out. And to me, it was all about the jump, right? Once he made the jump and went for the ball, given his athleticism and where it was, you know, I think it's a play he should have made once he committed to go getting it. But committing to go getting it was the whole.
That's why it's so impressive to me. That takes giant stones. I think most left fielders in that situation let the ball drop and let a run score. And then, you know, it's the continued roller coaster ride with Sciraldi there. Craig Sciraldi on the mound. And I didn't trust that to happen. So it was enormous that he made that play.
Oh, huge. And so it's all about the stakes. It's all about the moment. It's all about, are you going for the win? Or are you staying back? Because if you just stayed back and played it on a hop, I think they might still have the lead. I don't know if they send the runner from second.
That's close.
That was shallow left field. And if he played it really on a hop and was committed to playing it on a hop in a throwing position, he probably would have had that guy at second, although the guy was probably running on contact, right?
There were two outs. Yep.
So I don't know. Close call, either way, right? But he could have played it that way.
No question.
He could have played it on a hop. And so I think all the credit he's getting for that catch and all the accolades and the rankings and whatnot is deserved. I'm taking nothing away from him. You think we might, but we're not.
I mean, it is. I don't think it's wrong to say it was a game-winning catch. And to me, that's the real distinction now with the Red Sox. This is the change. And look, for all the stuff you say, well, they change managers. Is that really going to be enough? You start to wonder at a stage like this when you look at them and you say the influence and impact Cora has had on them in terms of confidence and aggressiveness and the way they play the game has been significant. Like, Benintendi went to win that game. Cora manages to win games. It felt to me like in the past, they were tentative, they were timid, they weren't confident, they weren't aggressive. It's all the things we criticize them for the last 2 years. They get to the moment, the game elevates, and they don't. And now they are.
All right, what did Benintendi say about the play after the game, Jimmy? Let's
came in to catch. What was going through your mind on that play?
Yeah, I thought I got a good jump on it, and it wasn't hit that hard. I think it got in a little bit, so... I don't know. I thought I could catch it and timed it up well. And I mean, at that point, it was either do or die. So glad I caught it.
It's a great jump. It's a great jump. It was all about the reaction.
And, you know, look, for all the stuff we say, Benintendi was a center fielder in college. He's a center fielder. Betts is effectively a center fielder. He came up as an infielder, but he's a center fielder. He's got the ability to play center. And Bradley obviously is. They have three center fielders out there. And I don't know if I'd put Benintendi in quite the class as the other two, because the other two are really good. But, and Bradley's, you know, sensational. But for a guy in left field, you aren't going to find many better left fielders than him. And the other thing, and this is, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm reading into it too much, he's left-handed. The ball's to his right. If he's right-handed, it's a tougher play. He's got to backhand it and do what Reddick did in right center field at the top of the inning. So, you know, but all the way around, their defense saved them 4 or 5 runs in that game last night.
Their outfield defense, Maz.
Tremendous. And look, again, I can rattle off the specific plays for you. We were talking about this earlier. In the seventh inning, go back to the seventh inning, right? Correa hits a double down the right field line with 2 outs. Gonzalez is at first. Mookie goes in the corner, sprints, retrieves the ball, and then if you watch the throw... He doesn't turn, set, and throw. He just spins, gets it, and it was quick. It was fast. Gonzalez had to stop at third. They get out of the inning. They don't score. Okay, and then in the eighth inning, in fact, that's when Barnes came in and got the strikeout at the end of the inning. In the eighth, Kemp starts with the ball down the line. Then Betts races in the corner, makes a throw at second with Kimbrel on the mound, the leadoff batter. They get him out. You save at least a run there. So you save one in the seventh, one in the eighth, and then the Benintendi play in the ninth saves you 2, maybe 3. So now you're up to 4 or 5 runs, and we haven't even talked about the interference play, which at some point you have to give some credit to Betts for, because a great right fielder doesn't probably even get, if it's JD Martinez in right field,
oh yeah,
that's a home run.
No question.
Right? And I think part of the reason that Joe West calls it the way he calls it is because Mookie's going to catch that ball. He knows Mookie Betts' game. He looks at it and says, no, he was there, he's going to catch it.
Betts caused that call. No question about it.
I mean, really, they ended up saving, you look at it that way, 4 to 7 runs on outfield defensive plays in one game. If you get that in a month, that's a lot. In one game, 4 to 7 runs.
But the previous caller says outfield defense more important than infield defense.
See, I still say your shortstops, other than the catcher, most important defender on the field.
I don't think there are enough chances out there to balance that out.
And look, last night was a rarity because you get so many of them in one game. But you really, honestly, you usually don't get that many.
Just real quick, because you've apparently upset the older Red Sox fans.
Yeah, I knew it. I know
Dwight Evans. Yeah, Dwight Evans, 1975 World Series, Game 6, top of the 11th, score tied 6-6, runner on first, and the Red Sox trailed 3-2 in the series.
It's a good one.
Go-ahead run would have scored.
Yeah, Joe Morgan hit one into the corner. Evans ran back there and jumped.
Doubled up.
It was a great play.
Got it.
I mean, this is close.
How about the stupid Yaz catch?
I don't know which one you're referencing.
I can picture it in my mind because it's played over and over and over again on a Red Sox team that lost.
Running back towards the wall and catching it.
Yeah,
Dolly. Well, that's why this one's kind of moot. How did that series play out?
It was Billy Roar's no-hitter in New York.
Are you sure?
Yep, pretty sure.
Okay. Well, it all blends together. All those Red Sox losing teams, they are still celebrated for some reason. But anyway. Back to your phones. Billy in Rhode Island. Hi, Billy.
How you doing? Just want to make a comment. You know, I've been listening a couple hours. Basically, we saw a hell of a game last night with both teams. Everybody making good catches. The ball flying out of the park. Everything going crazy. Yeah, I mean, there's so much to talk about. But one thing I think we got to remember is I remember quotes being said that after the regular season, we get to the postseason and it's a whole new ball game. We start fresh. with the Yankees, with Houston, or whoever's next. But one thing I want to mention is that I haven't seen the pitching like I thought I was going to see with this Houston club. They were supposed to have the toughest pitching staff. They haven't showed it to me yet. So if they get beat tonight, let me tell you, that's going to be a tough one, and I'll use Maz's term, they're really going to get bit in the ass.
So, I mean, it is true. You look at the numbers of their bullpen versus yours. It was a mismatch for them.
Yes.
And your bullpen's outpitched them.
Yeah, it is. It's you know, again, I give the Red Sox a lot of credit here. I think some of it is their approach at the plate. But I also think Houston's starting to feel pressure now. And the Astros have not pitched well in this series.
The pitching staff's given up 16 runs in two games at home. They're not down in this series because of an interference call or anything like that. It's their pitching. Their pitching has been putrid.
Yeah, and I think they're terrified. I mean, I do. I think
it's apparent.
The way they're terrified of the Red Sox. Honestly, I think they're giving the Red Sox too much credit. They need to attack them more.
Victor in Dorchester. Hi, Victor.
Hey, guys. I know you guys touched on earlier on Kimbrel's emotional breakdown, sweating on the mound.
Niagara Falls out there, Victor.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to kind of ask you guys is your opinion on his post games after he almost blows it in a game. So game four in New York, he kind of laughed it off and said, you know, yeah, it got interesting out there, and you kind of forgot about it because they were moving on. They were clinching to the ALCS. But after last night, his response was, yeah, I got to get, you know, Mookie a Christmas gift. And I think as a closer, you expect to see this dominant attitude, taking ownership and saying, hey,
right,
I suck.
Well, hey, Victor, let me just cut you off. Do we have cuts, Maz, that you got? Did I miss something?
No. We're trying to get it, but the audio's not great. And it was the thing that surprised me is when they asked him, you know, they went to you for six out. Did you know that was coming? And he said, not really.
Right.
He said, not really. So to me, that sort of popped up during the game. And in a situation like that, you would think that Cora would say to him ahead of time, hey, look, you know, we're going to push Porcello here. We'll see how it goes. But if we have a shot, I might have to come to you for a couple of innings.
So we don't have Kimbrel sound, but I know what he's talking about. Like he was.
So do I.
He was sort of giddy in the post game, like sort of laughing about, you know, I'm glad he got that one. I mean, and I'm just sort of recreating that in my head. But just the way he carried himself, it wasn't what I didn't see this. I need to be better. I need to give our team a better chance. They bailed me out, and I need to get better. I'm going to be better. Like, I don't feel that seriousness from him, that self sort of thing. I don't feel that from him. And you made a great point, too. Go back and look at his reaction when Kemp was thrown out at second to lead off the eighth. He celebrated like it was, I said, New Year's Eve. Like, they had just won the World Series. Like, what he really should be doing is buckling down and wondering why he's getting hit again and sort of, like, that wasn't a win for you, pal. You got bailed out.
Absolutely right.
And then the sweating. Oh, my goodness, the sweating.
He's not in control of his emotions.
He looks like Dan Lifshatz back there, schwitzing and schwitzing. My God, give that guy a towel back there.
No, he's got to stand on a towel on the mound. It's that bad. He's crapping his pants. There's no two ways about it. He's terrified. And the comments after the game, I think that's what those tell you. He's afraid. Because, and look, say what you will, like, what sticks out to me is when you compare him to other guys who've done the job well, right? So let's use Papelbon, whom a lot of us hate now. For lots of good reasons, by the way, and was a knucklehead. When the Red Sox collapsed in 2011, Jonathan Papelbon stood there and said, look, this one's on me. What do you want me to tell you? You know, I got to do the job. That's what they lean on me for, and I didn't do it. Okay? And so he owned it. He was accountable for it. This guy, he doesn't say that. He's terrified. He is terrified. And the problem is that Cora's got nowhere else to go. What is he going to do? He's just got to hope that this guy locks in and gets into a rhythm. Because other than that, if it gets to Game 7 of the World Series, it will not surprise me if he doesn't get the ball. If they get to Game 7...
We just discussed that they aren't going to replace Kimbrel.
In the early... I don't think they'll do it now. But if they get to the last game of the playoffs and there is no other game, I wouldn't surprise me if they went to someone else. And when I say someone else, you know, Price, Sale, Brazier, like, take your pick. I'm just saying it would not surprise me if we're unorthodox in Game 7 of the World Series.
Okay, we'll reset our thoughts on the game's most controversial play right after this.
Felger and Maz. The Sports Hub. Felger and Maz.
Wow.
98.5. The Sports Hub.
Altuve, right field, back there. Bats at the track. He leaps, and it is out. It's off a fan. No, they're saying off of Betts. It is in play and maybe calling it interference. Joe West made a couple of calls.
Mookie with the jump. He had it measured. It looked like he was going to catch it, and he gets stopped from catching it from the hand of the fan. The fan closed his glove.
And out is the call. Wow. But we did have a down-the-wall angle. Unfortunately, the security guard here leans out over and blocks
the camera of the shot down the line. Do I believe Mookie Betts went into the stands to bring that ball back? Absolutely. But the call on the play was that he was interfered with. They stayed with that.
As a break for the Red Sox. As a bad break for Houston.
What do you think I thought? What did I see? I saw fan interference. I've had this a couple times, or we have as a team. And they deemed the fan reached over into the field of play and interfered with Betts. Jose pays the biggest price because the trajectory of the ball looked like it was going to leave the ballpark. But we assume, and you can assume a lot with Mookie because he's an incredible athlete, we assume he's going to make this spectacular catch, jumping as high as he can into the crowd. I asked for a review, and obviously they're going to give it to us. And they reviewed it and came back with the same outcome. So once the fan reaches in, you know, past that line of the fence, we're going to penalize hitters every time. And so, you know, change that whole inning.
He went after the ball, and Joe called it out right away. I saw the replays, and, you know, I know the boundaries and all that. And I was pretty sure that it was going to be called out. You know, he didn't reach over the fence. He was actually parallel with the wall. So that's the rule, and we got the out.
All right, that play again. Just resetting our thoughts. I thought it was the right call. I thought it was the right call. I thought it was an amazing call by Joe West in real time. That was my first takeaway. What a great call by him.
No more bitching about Joe West in this town.
I mean, he's a doofus and an a-hole.
People forget that he helped you beat the Yankees with the Bellhorn call and the Bronson Arroyo call. He made the right call there, I believe.
He was the guy in that game?
What, you mean the slapping the ball? When A-Rod slapped the ball out of the glove?
I think he was the umpire in that game.
That was him?
Well, I didn't know that.
And what was the Bellhorn
home run that went off a fan in the stands?
That was in Game 6, John Lieber, yeah. There was a fan up by the wall that it landed in the first row, and they called it a home run.
Let me say this, too, about Joe West. I don't know how it happens, but trouble always finds him. Like, he's always in the middle of it. He was in right effing field last night.
Right.
And we'll see in 4 hours. Like, you do nothing out there. And, of course, first inning, Joe West is right in the middle of it. I have watched baseball since I was a little boy for, you know, 45, 50 years I've watched baseball. I've watched a ton of Red Sox baseball over the last couple of years. And I will ask you as well. When is the last time you ever saw an umpire get hit by a thrown ball from the catcher on a stolen base?
Never.
Have you ever seen it?
I can't remember.
I've never seen it. I go to one game this year, and Joe West gets plunked with a ball thrown from a catcher on a stolen base.
Oh, yeah, no, he get drilled, too.
It's like, how does the ball, trouble, big plays, it's like gravity. I guess it's just he's like this massive moose of a man. It's like, that's what happens.
He literally has a gravitational pull for controversy.
Yeah, moose is one word.
The gravitational pull.
I'd use the word whale.
He's like, but it's like, it's unbelievable. Stick him behind the plate, something happens. Stick him at second base, he gets plunked with the ball. Stick him in right field, where nothing ever happens, and he is in the middle of the most controversial play. And oh, by the way, I think he got it right. And so I just find it uncanny that Joe West is always in the middle of it. Like, the planets revolve around the fat ass of Joe West. Just always in the middle of it.
He's got his own solar system.
It's unbelievable.
Murray, what'd you say? He's got his own gravitational pull?
Yeah, for controversy. He's that big of a name, and he does often try to make it about him, so...
The black hole, it all gets sucked into Joe West. So, of course, he's in right field where nothing ever happens, and he's in the middle of this. But I think he got it. I think it was a great call to do it in that setting, on the road, in that corner where he's got to stand the rest of the game, in real time, bang, bang, in real time, I'm like, Homer, thing's gone. That is seven rows deep, and it just bounced off someone's hand, right? Like, in real time, like, that was no brainer, gone. And I think it was the TBS crew that was sort of fumbling around with, what did Joe West call? Or maybe Joe West was slow to call it himself. I still can't tell. You know, like, one or the other. But Joe West's call was fan interference out. And it was a 50-50 ball. It could have gone either way. I think it was right on the line. But I think he got it right, and I think replay was right to uphold it, or at least just let it stand. And, well, that's what I think. I still think you got a break because it was a 50-50 ball. Could have gone either way, and it went your way, so that's good luck. It's good fortune. It doesn't mean that you suck or that you didn't deserve to win. So the sensitivity of Red Sox fans on that is perplexing.
Yeah, and I don't understand why people get bent out of shape about this either. Like, oh, it's clearly interference! No, it isn't clearly interference. That's the whole point. Is now, if you want to tell me you believe it's interference, fine.
Fine.
I'll tell you, when I saw it, I went, that's a home run. Instinctively, I said, that's a home run. Because I feel like Mookie is venturing outside of the field of play there. And once that happens, all bets are off.
So, I mean, but there's nothing wrong with saying it was a close play and you got the benefit of the doubt.
Sure. They got the call.
It was a controversial call. It was a close call. Could have gone either way and it went your way. Like, that's not, that's okay. Don't get your panties all twisted in a bunch because you got a close call.
If you had 50 umpires make that call, you get 25-25.
I don't know about that. No.
You think you get more call in the home run?
I think the vast majority just... home run, man.
So then you really caught a break.
Home run. That's why I'm telling you. I think it takes someone like Joe West to make that call, to go against a little bit of the grain of what I think would normally be called there. And I think he got it right. Barely, but maybe not 50-50. Close.
But I think you mentioned it earlier. I think Betts is the fact there. You have to look at the player. And if there's no fans there, hypothetically speaking, I think Betts makes that play 10 times out of 10.
And honestly, the more I see the pitcher, the more I realize that it is parallel to the fence. It's right on the fence.
When absolutely.
When it first happened, I'm like, well, he's three rows deep in the stands. How could that be fan interference when he's reaching, clearly reaching into the stands? And then you see the pitcher. No. It's right there. It's right there on the line. Now, I think that should be a home run. Like, I think they should rewrite the rules. As it's written, it was called correctly, and what should have happened, happened. But I think they should rewrite the rules in that, in those places where the fans are right on top of the fence, when you go up over that yellow line, I think it's all fair game. It's right. Like, you know, it's every man for himself up there.
Yep, you are venturing into fan territory.
This isn't Jeffrey Mayer reaching over the fence and pulling thing from below the fence into the crowd. No, this ball was in the crowd. You know,
I mean, that's how I feel. Like, I feel like the ball was in the crowd and Mookie went up to go get it. And so now, once he was up there, did he get bumped? Absolutely.
Yes. Would he have caught the ball?
I say probably.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I say probably. Now, what you don't know is if, you know, he hits the wall and the ball pops out. Like, you don't know any of that.
Right.
But he was there. I mean, he was there. It looked like it was going to be a hell of a play. But they did. They caught a break there.
Okay. So that's our reset on the fan interference play. Your thoughts on that? Your thoughts on everything Red Sox? We have been taking little Red Sox breathers throughout the course of the day. I'll give you one, a little quick 30-second breather, because I did find this interesting yesterday. Let's see. Bill Belichick was offended yesterday. Bill Belichick was absolutely offended. Someone down there had the gall to hit the third rail on Bill Belichick. And we'll tell you what that is right after Murray's update.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Ooh, I like this.
This is Felger and Mass.
Part of me wants to do it just to feel what that feels like.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Sports Hub. The Sports Hub. The Sports Hub.
Oh, wait a minute. We're talking about Lawrence Taylor now. Yeah. I'm not putting anybody in Lawrence Taylor's class. So you put everybody down below that. That's with a lot of respect to a lot of good players now, but we're talking about Lawrence Taylor.
Who did that? Don't do that.
I saw this too yesterday.
Don't do that.
Bite your tongue.
You can say they were deflating balls. You can say they were filming coaches. You can say that he's mean and ornery. And you can say this, that, and the other. But if you dare imply that anyone is anywhere near the sainted Lawrence Taylor, bite your tongue, sir. That's when Bill Belichick... No, I will not let that stand.
I'm surprised he didn't go down and wash the guy's mouth up with soap.
I am surprised he didn't go down there and slap him across the face with a moist sausage. Seriously, don't do that. Don't. Say whatever you want. Do not impugn the integrity of the mid-80s Giants, because that Bill will not stand for that. He will not let that stand. That is it. That is the final straw for Billy there.
It is just like, it's like women at a tea party, right? Like someone says, "You think Khalil Mack reminds you at all of Lawrence Taylor?"
How dare you, Donna? Don't ever say that.
Take that back.
Let me hear his answer again. Just his answer. Like, Ken, he's offended.
Oh, wait a minute. We're talking about Lawrence Taylor now. Yeah, I'm not putting anybody in Lawrence Taylor's class. So you put everybody down below that. That's with a lot of respect to a lot of good players now, but we're talking about Lawrence Taylor.
We're talking about Lawrence Taylor.
Well, I never.
Don't ever say that someone can read an offense better from the middle of the defense than Carl Banks. You will get slapped across the face with the back of Bill Belichick's hand. That is it. Don't pretend that anyone can pick up a third and one better than Gary Anderson, who was their big running back. Otis Anderson. Oh my God, does he love those? It's mostly the defense, though. Oh my God, he loves it. He loves them. Like, just to continue the conversation, like Buck likes Yaz. Like it's like he does. Bill still has posters of LT on his wall at home. Like, I used to have Marcus Johnson dunking on the skyline of Milwaukee. Like, Bill and Lawrence Taylor, don't go there. Don't. Nope. We're talking about Lawrence Taylor now.
Oh, that's a dangerous area.
Like, did the podium move when they started talking about Lawrence Taylor? Good Lord.
It came right off the ground.
God. So that's it. That's your quick Patriots breather. What? We're talking about Lawrence.
How gauche.
Like, Bill will never say anything bad. Like, that is borderline. If his player said something like that, he'd be pissed because you're giving Khalil Mack bulletin board material, really. I mean, the way the headline reads in a lot of these sites, like on ESPN, Belichick, Mack, no Lawrence Taylor. Like,
right, you can twist that, like, and make it sound
totally.
Like,
it's like Dan Quayle and Benson, like, son, or no, what was it? It was Ross Perot. What was the vice president? You know.
Oh yeah, yeah. Lloyd Benson.
I knew your daddy, and you're no John F. Kennedy. What was that line?
No, the line was, I knew Jack Kennedy. I worked with Jack Kennedy. Jack Kennedy was a friend of mine. Son, you are no Jack Kennedy. Oh,
that's what you do if you compare someone to Lawrence Taylor. Like, that's what you get. That's what you get. And so, but that is, like, it could be, I'm sorry, like the headline, Belichick, Mac no LT. You know, Mac doesn't know the backstory or any reason. It's
sure.
Like, what?
What the hell is he going to click on that
Say
for?
What?
Just read the headline like everybody else.
Hey, just last week, Stephon Gilmore said that Jalen Ramsey was his own player and they cut his tongue out.
I think they ball gagged him. I think they literally put a ball gag in his mouth.
I told you, they removed his tongue.
So Bill just gave Khalil Mack a headline. If Mack wants to take advantage of it.
Or if he even plays.
Or if he even notices it or even plays or whatever. Bill just gave him one. If Bill's player did that, if Stephon Gilmore said about, a receiver coming up, well, he ain't no Jerry Rice. Gilmore, headline, Gilmore, so-and-so ain't no Jerry Rice. Bill would kill him. He'd say, what are you doing? But Bill's going to break his own. If you go there with LT, all bets are off. There are no team rules when it comes to the 86
How
Giants.
How dare you?
There's no. All of the whole handbook goes out. You go to the 80s Giants, all bets are off, folks. It becomes personal.
Oh, yeah, no, that's a violation of the Emily Post handbook.
Oh, my God, he loves that team. Oh, my God, he loves it. Loves that 80s Giants team like his kids.
In all my years, I never...
All right, so anyway, back to your phones. I think, just to reset before I take this call, I think this series is over, and I think you've just about won the championship. And I'm not doing that to be a wise guy. I think you're better than the NL teams. I think the NL teams, especially if it goes seven, we'll see what happens on that side. But they've all spent a lot of bullets pitching-wise. I know you have too, but those teams are dependent on their pitching.
Yeah, I also think it ends tonight with David Price on the mound.
Yeah, okay.
That's
so
me saying that.
Right, I mean, 3-1, Houston's not winning this series. This thing's over.
They're shook. They really are.
And
Price is going to pitch 4 2/3 no-hit innings tonight, and Cora's going to pull him out of the game so he doesn't get the win.
So, like, I think this thing's all but over. And I mean, like, this season, it's championship. If you don't win a championship by this point, I'd be disappointed. I'd say you should have had one at this point. 3-1 on Houston, and then those crappy NL teams staring you in the face, especially the Brewers. The Brewers are the 07 Rockies. They're built differently, but it's the same quality of competition. The Dodgers are a little more interesting. Their starting pitching's elite, and their closer's elite. They have some good bullpen arms. But they got, like, two guys in the lineup that you got to worry about. It's that you should beat that team, too. Steven Stone, I'm on this. Go, Steve.
Hey, listen, it's false sense of security with this 3-1 thing.
Why?
Why? Because Houston will win tonight, okay? Now, are you aware of the Astros' home-road dichotomy?
Yeah, they hit better on the road for some reason.
No.
Oh.
Going into tonight, they're 48-37 at home, 11 games over 500. While on the road, they're 59-25,
uh-huh.
34 games over 500 on the road.
So they're better road team.
So there's fundamentally, for some reason, they suck at home.
Okay, so I'm going to cut you there. They also do hit better on the road. We were just looking it up. They're second in the league in road OPS, 10th in home OPS.
I mean, that's stunning.
So I don't, maybe it's that dude in the dugout that maybe they put there with the camera phone or something.
I wouldn't rule it out. Crane's assistant?
I don't know. But, I mean, there's obviously a path. It's like, well, if this were 10 years ago, you'd say Sale, Garrett Cole, and now you have a Game 7. They're absolutely in it. If this were in a different age, you'd say this is the 07 Red Sox who were down 3-1 but had Beckett and Schilling and whoever lined up there.
Sure.
It's like they had their pitching lined up, and the Astros definitely have their starting pitching lined up, but I've never seen starting pitching mean less than this era.
Well, look, and it's a good point. What I'm worried about is the Red Sox pitching. That's why I don't think it's over. So you've got Price going on short rest, and then you say, okay, Sale and Eovaldi lined up for 6 and 7, except we don't know what Sale is. Now, you want to tell me you feel good with Eovaldi waiting for Game 7? So do I. I mean, the Red Sox are in good shape. There's no two ways about it. They needed to come home 3-2. At worst, that's what's going to happen. Either that or they'll win the series. I just think that right now, boy, their pitching staff is taxed. It is taxed. And I don't know what Sale is. So to me, that's a huge variable. And I don't think it's over yet.
Long commercial-free segment is next.
This is Felger and Mass
on 98.5,
the Sports Hub.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Craig Kimbrell will start the eighth inning. The Red Sox closer looks like he's out for the final 6 outs. That hit him?
Yeah.
It did. Bregman will reach. That's in the right, a base hit. What a piece of hitting by Springer. 3 hits and a walk. David Price starting to loosen in the Red Sox bullpen. The fact that he's even up right now probably takes him out for tomorrow. Runner at third, 2 outs. And a swing and a miss. He struck him out. Craig Kimbrell gives up one, but strands one. What's your confidence level if you're in Red Sox Nation right now? Kimbrell on the mound, David Price in the bullpen in case Kimbrell cannot finish this off. It's a two-run lead. And the fact he's thrown so much in the bullpen probably means they won't use him tomorrow.
That's right. I mean, especially the way he's thrown right now. I mean, that's full bore.
3 balls and a strike. Kimbrell deals. And it's ball four. The 3-2, Correa goes. It's ball four. And the bases are loaded. And Bregman is coming up. A base hit, good time. Runners will be off with a crack of the bat with 2 outs. Kimbrell deals. Bregman in the air, left field. Benintendi dives. And he makes the catch. Oh, what a play. Game saver, Andrew Benintendi.
Alex, given Craig's struggles in the postseason and even tonight, what gave you faith that he was going to be able to get that last out?
I mean, he's our guy. We knew all along that something like this was going to come up, and we trust our guy. He threw it all well. I know it didn't look pretty, but we got 27 outs, and now we move on.
You had Price warmed up, it looked like. Was there a point you would have brought him in? Or?
He was going to come in if the eighth was worse than what it was, whatever. If they would have scored two, he was going to come in if we would have scored two in the ninth because of the long inning, but it didn't happen. Now tomorrow he'll start.
So that drama, that was drama. I'm sorry. When the eighth opens up and there's Kimbrell after Barnes looks terrific in that one at bat, those curveballs he threw to strike out White were phenomenal. But clean sheet, eighth inning, here's Kimbrell, and then they quickly show a shot of David Price warming up. Said, oh, now what was already a fascinating game is about to get great. And if anything's going to keep you in for that final 35 minutes of a 4-hour and 35-minute game, it's that. And so there it is. And I guess from a drama standpoint, it didn't disappoint because Kimbrel was all over the place. Niagara Falls out there, the schwitzing and sweating. My God, dude. And then Price, you know, when are they going to go to him? Are they going to go to him? Cord jumped out of the dugout at one point to go talk to Kimbrel. Obviously, he ran out there to let him know immediately, I'm not taking you out. But there was several points in there where Kimbrel could have come out. You think should have come out, right?
Absolutely. I looked at it and I said, holy crap. Like, you know, he starts walking the bases loaded. Like at that point, you know, to me, I questioned whether he should have been in the game in the eighth inning. And then all of a sudden now in the ninth, you're teetering. Like there were lots of opportunities to get him out of that game. Lots.
Okay, so he stuck with him. We gave you Cora's cut, though, and it was unclear that he was asked, when would he have used him? And he said, yeah, if it had gotten worse, if they had scored two runs and it had gotten worse, or it had gotten two runs in the ninth, and he sort of, it was really hard to understand what he meant. He could have meant if Houston scored two in the eighth and it was a run-run game going into the ninth, he would have used Price, or if the Sox had tacked on two, because did they have the bases loaded in the top of the ninth?
Yeah. When Reddick made that great catch, remember?
Right. Thank you. Wow. So much happened. I forgot that. So if the Sox had tacked on two and it became more of a mop-up situation, then he would have used Price. It's hard to tell what he meant.
Yeah, I'm still confused. I don't know. I'm hoping someone follows up with him tonight and they ask him for a clarification, like when exactly Price was going to come into that game, just so we know. But my guess is that it won't even be revisited.
But it felt like to me he was going down with the ship. He was going down with Kimbrel. He was going to sink or swim with Kimbrel. I mean, bases loaded, two out with Bregman up. So at that point, it's either going to be the game ending out or he's going to tie the ball game with a base hit, right? I mean, so it felt to me like it was sink or swim with Kimbrel. The question is if Bregman had scored two and it was a tie game and now there's runners on first and third or whatever, does Cora let Kimbrel face that last batter to get it to the 10th inning? I think he would have. I feel he was just sink or swim with Kimbrel there. But the Price thing is fascinating, and that I guess Brian Anderson, the play-by-play guy, did get that wrong, saying since he's up, it automatically disqualifies him for tomorrow. No, Price is going to start.
It's like that is so rare.
Well, which is just like welcome to Major League Baseball 2018. The Brewers in the NLCS, their Game 5 starter Wade Miley, their Game 6 starter Wade Miley.
Like, so just, you know what? I even read up on this, but he's got to be like the first guy to start consecutive postseason playoff games since when?
Since Smokey Joe Wood in 1898. Like, right, something like that.
Yeah.
So it's like it's just all bananas. It's all, the game's changed so much in that regard. So Price is going to start today. And here we go again. It's not a must win.
Yeah, and that's why he's going to win tonight.
They're in a good spot.
This is the least amount of postseason pressure that David Price has ever faced in his career. They're playing with house money. They're up 3-1 on the road. There's zero expectations on him whatsoever. This team right now, down is up, up is down. Jackie Bradley Jr. is Reggie Jackson. The bullpen doesn't suck anymore. It's cats and dogs living together. Oh, and it's Alex Cora's birthday, too. Like, everything's coming up for the Red Sox. Price wins tonight. Lock it down.
Okay, so, you know, those shots of him out in the bullpen are just... they're just fascinating because it's like on the mound, he could not be more of a puddle. In the dugout, he looks a little cooler, but maybe that's because he's 400 feet from the plate. I don't know. In fact, the game before, he's doing some housework out there, brushing the mound.
Raking.
So, of course, Big Jim Murray couldn't help himself. As he was raking, what do you think that sounded like out there?
Yeah, Murray, what did it sound like?
Well, we have a few ideas, right?
Oh. Well, the therapist said this would be good for me and my nerves. Internalize the pressure, David. Push out the negativity. Push out the negativity.
It's a pain in the ass trying to line up that raking sound, too.
It's pretty good.
Video.
That's good. Raking. Rake out the negativity. I like it.
So these are up on our Facebook page if you actually want to see them to video, which we can't show you on the simulcast because of rights agreements and whatnot, but there's another idea.
They say I'm a waste of $31 million, huh? I'll show them. Check out these raking skills, bitch. You've never seen a mound this well manicured.
Simple. That could have been one of the things he was muttering to himself.
No question. Yeah, did you see him after the final out running around out there like a maniac?
Oh, yeah, totally. He's 400 feet from the action.
Kicking the fence. Yeah, let's go!
Tonight he's going to be with his junk tucked between his legs like, oh, you know, the usual.
Constipated.
The usual thing.
I'm telling you, his approach tonight, if we win, great. If not, there's two more games. It's all good.
I get to go home to Astro, my mother-in-law.
I get to go home.
I'll tell you, though, with the way their year has gone, I mean, David Price pitches the game that sends him to the World
Series. Of course, right? It's just
like it's just the way it's going. It's just the way it's going. At some point, you do sort of, I don't, you know, I'm not one of these people who buys into this destiny crap.
Lock. It's happening.
I'm just not like that. Because I sort of say, no, you focus on the next game, you start all over, you start pitching again. I'm just not wired that way. But the way this thing's going, I mean, would it surprise you?
Of course not.
And you know what? If there's also an element of this that's important to them, because if they can win this game, well, now Chris Sale gets a whole bunch of extra days off. Now you're getting Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday before the World Series game one. The whole bullpen rests. The whole staff rests. Everyone recharges while the Brewers and Dodgers are still going at it. Like, you really, there is value in this game for them tonight.
Give me one more idea of what David might have been saying out there.
I still can't believe that Skip pulled me from that game. That son of a bitch cost me a playoff win. Thank God for this Zen garden so I can keep calm.
It is, you know, housework and things like that is soothing to the nerves.
Oh, no question about it. I do it all the time.
Totally. Or maybe it's OCD. Or whatever.
No, it's something you can control. It gets you sort of, you get back in a relaxed state.
Busy work.
Yeah.
Is that what that is?
Yeah. Clean your car, do the dishes, whatever it is. Yeah. Organize your clothes closet, same stuff.
You don't give yourself time to think.
I wish my wife could find the same therapy in that.
No go, huh?
Oh my God. What a mess that lady is.
Slot.
Love her to death, but what? Like 19-year-old college student. So she doesn't find the same soothing things that we do in, do the dishes.
It's because she's mentally stable already.
Maybe that's it. Yeah, nuts, like they're neurotic like the rest of us. All right, an hour left to go of your phones right after Murray's 90-second update here. No commercials.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.